LibertyNation.com does not endorse candidates, campaigns, or legislation, and this presentation is no endorsement. It's all immigration, impeachment, and Ilaria Baldwin on this episode of The Uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are The Uprising with Scott Cosenza.
I felt this thrill going up my leg.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
A president! Can you believe it?
This is somebody who knows what's right and what's wrong.
You know what podcasts are, by the way?
Talk shows for people who cannot make it in talk radio.
I just want to say to the men of this country, just shut up, do the right thing for a change.
I think possibly that's the most unattractive form in which prejudice can be met in this country, is the rage of the entitled.
Welcome back to The Uprising, a podcast of LibertyNation.com. I am your host, Scott Cosenza, and joining me today from a place we will not discuss is Tim Donner. Tim, the host of Liberty Nation Radio. Thank you for once again
appearing. I'm going to narrow it down a little bit for the listeners. I am outside of the 2 mile perimeter that they put around the West Wing, the Western steps of the Capitol.
We're going to get the inauguration that you covered.
I'm outside that 2 mile perimeter. That's all I'll say. Otherwise, undisclosed.
And you, it's not probation exactly, but HR did send you back with a note. So we're going to be a little bit cautious about the topics that we're having you comment on for today. But the first one is a safe. It's the big story, I think, of the week for me, certainly, especially when you consider previous reporting, Tim. Once again, Ilaria and Alec Baldwin lead coverage in the uprising. I don't know that.
Here we go again.
If you have heard this, Tim, but Alec Baldwin leaves Twitter after uproar over wife's heritage is the story from none other than the first choice of news, Tim, for the sheeple is CNN. Okay.
The sheeple. I like that.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that in a long time.
Or airports, of course, is really their key. I think that was Rush.
Can we repeat? Let's just take the opportunity to repeat once again for those unfortunate souls, most people who believe that airports have CNN on in every single monitor because it's the most trusted name in news. No, they're paid a lot of money to do that.
Yeah.
That's the only reason CNN is on in every airport.
I thought you were going to say we should recap how we got to where we are with Ilaria. And I think that's a wise move. So for people who don't know, this woman who was a kind of wannabe famous person who's married to Alec Baldwin lied and pretended that she was from Spain and she's from Beacon Hill, a rich neighborhood in Boston. And she put on this fake accent, anything, and that all blew up in their faces. And I just thought it was hilarious, Tim, because I'm reading the CNN story. It's a print CNN story. So right away, it's a little bit whatever, but they can't even stick to the real news on this nothing story that has no, it's not about Trump or nuclear arms or anything, but I just love this. So I want to read this to you. It's, quote, goodbye for now for Alec Baldwin and Twitter. The actor bid adieu to social media platform Monday in the wake of an uproar over his wife's claims of having a Spanish heritage. But that's not true at all. It's that the actor bid adieu to social media platform Monday in the wake of uproar over the revelation that his wife was lying about where she was born. Has nothing to do with heritage. Heritage is, has nothing to do with your actual birthplace. And that's what this is about. That simple fact right there. That's what the entire controversy is about. And when you read the CNN story, they don't even give you that one kernel of truth.
Did you think we'd ever get to this point where Donald Trump and Alec Baldwin are in the same boat off of Twitter?
Well, yeah.
One was, of course, involuntary.
Yeah. It's self-imposed on Mr. Baldwin's topic.
Right.
All right. Well, you did mention the lockdown, and let's go ahead and I guess we can talk about that first. We're going to also have a hospitality report from the District of Columbia, which I think with some encouraging news. on that front. I know that that's had a lot of a lot of resonance out there.
What does that mean?
Well,
hospitality. Stay tuned. I thought there wasn't any hospitality.
Stay tuned and find out.
There was no hospitality. That was the whole story, wasn't it?
Stay tuned and find out. So, for people who don't know, I was dispatched by my editor at LibertyNation.com to cover the inauguration of the 46th president of these United States, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. And the single, the only really big story besides the, of course, the fact that Donald Trump somehow, and without seemingly much in the way of coverage in the mainstream news, didn't stage some sort of coup attempt or blockade the doors,
the simplest thing for him would have been to just do what they thought he would do, just declare martial law. Then right. All the rest of it can flow right off of that, and you're in absolute dictatorial control. What? Wait a second. You mean he didn't, Scott?
Yeah. I thought he was just going to declare the election. You know, he should have just declared
null
the election
void
like they said he was going to do. But I bet he regrets not doing that.
But it is nice. You know, it is nice that Trump went out on a note of cooperation with Biden, because as the incoming president said, the only thing that he and Trump have ever agreed on is that Trump should not attend the Biden inauguration.
Oh, he actually said that? Biden said that?
Yes, he did.
Oh, okay.
He said the only thing he ever agreed on with Trump, Trump shouldn't be at his inauguration.
I want to talk about a lot of the reporting about the whole thing, but with respect to that particular story, I saw report after report that without saying these, the words they left out of the end of the, like, so they would explain that Trump wasn't going to attend Biden's inauguration, and then they would have like a piece discussing the history of when the last time that happened, like 100 years ago.
Right.
And what was left unsaid but was shouted from the tone and inflection was, what a classless piece of trash Donald Trump is, that he's not going to this this event. They left that part out, but it's hilarious because they never said, like, this to me is like one of those things where this is another fake news thing, right?
So in fact, it was a blessing imparted to Joe Biden, because if Trump was at his inauguration, that'd be half the story, at least right there. What did Trump say? What was his body language?
But they never have somebody, Tim, they never have somebody
say, Melania,
Tim, they never have somebody say, well, to be fair, Joe Biden did say he wanted to physically assault Donald Trump. He said he wanted to punch him in the face multiple times. He also called him a racist and said that was the lie that was the basis of his campaign. They act like Donald Trump just didn't do it because he's a jerk, rather than maybe there's a good reason why he wouldn't want to be in the same, in the same area.
Well, I think, I'm pretty well convinced that Donald Trump himself is convinced that his defeat was not legitimate.
As were all those people who assembled in this on the 6th.
Exactly.
But
if you honestly believe that, how possible is it really to sit by and watch the guy who you truly believe in your heart is an illegitimate president be sworn in? So the patriotic thing for him, to be honest with you, and for the sake of the country and for the sake of his successor, is to simply leave town, which is what he did.
Yeah. So the big story for me on the ground was the lack of access to the Capitol complex. There was the largest shutdown and tightened screwed lockdown of a huge swath of Washington, D.C. It's hard to imagine. I didn't have time to get the Google Earth out and actually measure like how many square miles it was. But the hotel I stayed in was just north of the Capitol complex, and the swearing in always takes place on the western facing side of the Capitol. So you have to be far west of the Capitol complex, but in line with it in order to be able to get a visual shot of that thing. And I asked the guy, how far do I have to walk to be able to go south? Again, I'm north of the Capitol, so to cut south so that I can get that visual line of sight, so I can take a picture and some video for LibertyNation.com, the sponsor of today's podcast. LibertyNation.com is your source for conservatarian news and analysis 24/7, Tim?
365.
There you go. Okay. Debbie Downer on the five.
However, in 3 years, I'll be able to say 366 again.
Okay. Thank you for that update on when the next leap year will be. So I couldn't get a shot. I got, you know, plenty of shots of the Capitol from other angles, but not that shot. And they had it blocked off for over 2 miles. So if you wanted to look, if you know, this great public event, the peaceful transfer of power, right? Well, it's not really that part of the public event. It's this lockdown thing. And the city is still partially locked down, and they're going to keep the troops there. And they keep saying, well, you know, there's internet talk and this and that. And nobody ever says, you know what? When do the threat assessment guys ever get called to the carpet and say, hey, you know, you guys are full of BS. There was zero of any of this, you know?
You know, I was thinking about during this. Now, there weren't many people across the country that were enthusiastic about Joe Biden. And you know, the great bulk of them
voted for Biden
simply because he had a pulse and wasn't Trump.
He was the non-Trump candidate. Right. That was his chief opinion.
And he had a pulse, and that was enough. Yeah. But, you know, there's a lot of people in this country who were overjoyed at his election. And it's those people that were denied the chance to come to Washington and see the guy inaugurated. I mean, ordinarily, Scott, 200,000 tickets are issued to the typical inauguration. This year it was 2,000, which means, of course, it was only political cronies, big donors, probably lobbyists. Who knows?
Chinese ambassador.
I mean, how about all the ordinary rank and file people that voted for Biden out there that might have wanted to come for an inauguration,
which is
what ordinarily happens.
And the press, Tim, especially the press, to exclude them is, I think it's disgraceful. The only way you could get into that thing to cover it is if before that violence started on this. So what happens is, after the violence on the 6th, the insurrection, they just locked down this whole area, this giant area of miles, square miles. And ordinarily, the area close to the stage would be blocked off, and that would be secure access.
Right.
But there would be open public viewing further down the mall. But there was none of it. And here's the other thing. And this is sort of like glossed over, not talked about. I'm not saying that they needed to have it open to the public so I could walk down there with a high-powered rifle.
Right.
Maybe they have a security zone where you have to go through magnetometers or something. I'm not sure exactly what would be the appropriate, you know, security feature. But to have zero public access, not one. You're telling me that with all the gazillions of dollars spent, maybe spend less on the fireworks display, which was quite lovely, by the way. I could see that from my hotel room a little bit. Instead of spending the money on the fireworks, why not go ahead and allow the public to go in? You know, that to me is what's inexcusable. I was shocked, Tim. First of all, as I told you before, I was shocked just that it was happening. Also, I haven't seen any of like ACLU, any of the press kind of.
Don't hold your breath.
You're right. Yeah.
No, you know, the last inaugural I went to, now I've been to either the inauguration itself and or inaugural ball for six different presidents and seven different inaugurations. The last one I went to in person was a very typical sort of citizen experience. It was 2005. It was Bush's second inaugural. So it wasn't a huge event when a sitting president, you know, goes through a second inauguration. Yeah. So it's not a big deal. But myself and my wife and my mother-in-law wanted to just go down and see it. We wanted to see the whole pomp and circumstance and the swearing in, the speech, the whole thing. So we went down, we took the metro. My mother-in-law was in a wheelchair. We wheeled her there through the mud. And we probably arrived at a spot about, I'm going to estimate 40 yards away from the podium. Okay. maybe 50 yards at most, about maybe an hour and a half before it started. And that's the typical citizen experience, is that you know, and the tickets are easy to get because there's 200,000 of them.
Tim, I think you show up. You buried the lead on this one. If I got that right, you just reported to me that you took the public transportation train to go into the city. Is that
well? That's something you're not familiar with, because your revulsion at the very thought of public transportation. Now, if you want to go into a tit for tat about who dislikes public transportation more, you're not gonna win that one.
I met some folks. So for people who don't know, typically how in a normal year, you'd get your tickets is they're given to congresspersons. So you write your congressman or senator, and that's how you can get tickets. I met a couple who were there. You know, they had travel plans that were already paid for and everything else. And they had they were Biden Harris supporters, or at least anti-Trumpers. I wasn't exactly sure, but I know that they said on the day after Election Day is when they asked for, you know, their senator, I think, for the tickets. And they said that, though, they wouldn't, you know, they revoked the tickets after the 6th, but they said, we're going to send you them in the mail later on as a souvenir. So, you know, you get that as your consolation prize.
I don't know, Scott, what do you think? How legitimate was it for them to have this kind of military perimeter surrounding this inauguration in the context of January 6th? Because, I mean, okay, that was a frightening insurrection in a lot of ways. But was it legitimate cause for what many have thought to be a paranoid reaction, a sort of a paranoid inauguration of fear?
It is definitely not legitimate to have such a security apparatus that excludes the public entirely.
Right.
You know, the level of ratcheting down in terms of invasiveness of inspections, I'm not sure exactly where that should be. I don't have a strong sense of it. We use the example of the magnetometer. I mean, is it like an airport, like getting on a plane? Is it that level? Maybe yes, maybe no. But one thing for sure is you can't say just admit no one, because it's un-American. I mean, it's like the exact opposite of this idea of open. I mean, no matter who's president, I think Pennsylvania Avenue should be reopened. I like the idea that, you know,
but I mean, the other thing is that demonstrations, protests have always been part of inaugurations. I mean, I remember the one in 2001, yeah. Bush's first inaugural. And of course he won the entire presidency on 537 freaking votes from Florida. I mean, it was that close. So, of course, the leftists were out in force. I remember my mother was wearing a fur that day. And my wife was, too. And they were heckled by protesters because they were wearing fur. But, you know, there were protests, but they weren't throwing flashbangs. They weren't, you know, they weren't even throwing stuff at fur coats. I mean, throughout the course,
Tim, you keep setting them up. I'm going to bat them back at you.
But every inauguration I've had to suffer through.
I just want to say that you have my sympathy.
I've been through so many of them, and the protests are always a part of it. Now, the first one I went to was Nixon. I was too young to know whether there were protests or not, but certainly I know historically that there were. I don't think there were when I went to the Jimmy Carter inauguration and parade and the inaugural ball. I don't think there were any protests then, but that's because, you know, how would you protest a guy like Carter coming in as a,
well, Tim,
you know, family values and
oddly
all that
enough,
stuff.
I think I would be one who would, because I was such a huge fan of the presidency of one Gerald R. Ford.
I know you were.
Veto machine.
Yeah.
For people who don't know, by the way,
your favorite establishment Republican of all time.
The best thing you can do to almost every piece of legislation that's ever been written is to veto it. I mean, it's mostly bad stuff, you know. So the man with the most vetoes is certainly my preference for
you know, I got to relate something that a senator said to me a couple summers ago. I had a chance to meet him and talk with him a bit. And it was in a setting where sort of everybody trusted each other. Nothing was going to be repeated. There's no media, all that stuff. And he said to me, yeah, I've been here for, I don't know, was it 10 years or something? He said, you know, I was told you just come here and vote no. Come here, vote no. He's a Republican senator.
Right.
I mean, so, you know, there's a lot to be said for simply, look, this is all about, I mean, if you think about it, Scott, if you think about Liberty Nation, you think about this program, you think about the radio show, you think about everything we do, it's all about stopping the left. I mean, okay, so some are more conservative, some are more libertarian. You got populist strains, nationalist strains. But the common thread is stopping the left, because we don't want anything out of government. We just want to stop them from having their way, because
there
we know what happens.
There is plenty to stop on the right as well, I would
That's
say.
True. That's true.
So but I don't see it that way at all, because I think it's stopping all the bad things. The left, maybe the progressives are the market leader, I think, in that area, but there's plenty of competitors. One of the stories I didn't have a chance to write about because of all the goings on with the inauguration was how Donald Trump in the final weeks and days of his presidency ramped up the federal execution machine. We saw the first execution of a woman since I think the 1940s or 50s mm-hmm. by the federal government at the hands of Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you read the stories about these people.
OK, so he's look, he's not 100%. Nobody's 100%.
I'm making the point.
I mean, let me put it this way. Basically, not all that is bad is on the left.
Yeah.
But pretty much all that's on the left is bad.
Well,
I mean,
let's say this. When you say on the left,
put it this way.
Are you differentiate? To me, it has to be differentiated between like liberals, like traditional.
Right.
But traditional liberals, like free speech liberals versus progressives. Like that's
that's part of it is the left as it's constituted today. Because I don't think I would have said that 20, 25 years ago, because some of the liberal principles that were honestly held, you know, we're worthy of support in some form or another anymore. I mean, it's all about scorched earth, and it's all about purging the very existence of Donald Trump, punishing him when he leaves office. You've got I'm writing a story about this for LibertyNation.com, Scott. You've got OK, so when you think about the concept, come on, there must be some Democrats that are reasonable, that are common sense, that are, you know, support the founding values. And the first one that comes to mind in the Senate is Joe Manchin, right? I mean, Joe Manchin's the one guy who you could say, look, he's from West Virginia, a wildly pro-Trump state. He understands he has to be conservative to get reelected, et cetera. So you figure, okay, well, how about Joe Manchin? Well, Joe Manchin, after the election, said, hey, I'm not going to be the deciding vote to give us Medicare for All or Green New Deal or any of that crazy stuff. So you're thinking, okay, this is encouraging. But then, evidently, the party machinery, the party leadership got to him, because just a few days later, he went out on national TV and said the Senate should consider using a little known part of the 14th Amendment to remove Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz from the Senate for daring to question the Electoral College results. And this is from Joe Manchin. So you want to define the left today? Joe Manchin 20 years ago would never say anything like that. But this,
I'm thinking more of the ideological leaders of the left rather than political leaders. So I'm thinking more of, on the good side, relatively speaking, the Andrew Sullivans and the Glenn Greenwalds, Sam Harris, these people.
But you're talking about liberals as opposed to leftists.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's see where Biden goes with this, because, you know, he can go either direction. He can go left. He can go center, so-called center. You know, he's a product of the establishment. So, you know, my hope is, and I suppose my 55-45, maybe 60-40 expectation is that he's going to tack more towards the center than the left.
My prediction
but it may
is
not be, we'll may be, not be his call.
We'll be in a new war by Easter.
I'm not gonna argue with that based on Biden's propensity to support basically every war that came before him when he was in the U.S. Senate.
Well, just base it on his performance in office. When he got into the chair, Tim, he signed the he just started with these executive orders that like. And his speech making, I just think it's just so, you know, it's one of these deals where like Obama would, it's really a third Obama term also sort of is how I see it. But Obama would say these beautiful lofty passages about this, that, and the other thing. And then when he went back to actually govern, he turned the screws like an old Chicago right. Paul, you know, and
until he didn't have any choice and he lost the House and the Senate, and then he had to function with his pen and his phone. But you know what?
He didn't have to. He chose to get.
Well, but I mean, he had no leverage in Congress.
Yeah.
So that was his only choice if he wanted to continue his activist presidency. But you know, one of the things that Obama, interestingly, he didn't say this to Trump, but he said it about Trump. He said it, I think it was on public TV. I think it was on PBS in late 2016 or early 2017, while Obama was still president before Trump came in, but after he was elected, he said, one of the things he'll learn is that you don't want to use executive orders any more than you have to, because they can so easily be reversed.
Yeah.
By the next president. And that's exactly what Trump did to Obama with his executive orders.
Yeah.
And now, you know,
the
Biden
pile
wants,
on the desk in front of.
Yeah.
In front of Biden.
In front of Biden, 17 executive orders, all designed to say, I'm not Donald Trump, just to make sure you don't know.
Right.
I'm not Donald Trump.
Well, you know,
I have
that Keystone Pipeline
I'm not
deal.
Donald Trump.
That Keystone Pipeline deal, they say that kills 40,000 pipe fitter union jobs.
That's what a political animal, that's what a career politician, that's what the quintessential career politician Joe Biden does. He responds to his base and figures the thing polled.
Oh yeah, well, look at the healthcare thing. You know? It's a sop to the lobbyists. They wrote the bill. All this stuff. That's the kind of thing that I'm talking about when I say it's like Obama. It's like we're going to use these lofty terms about making sure everybody's covered, and then we'll just let the insurance company lobbyists write the bill and we'll pass whatever they say. And there's no, you know, you mentioned that. I think you mentioned that single payer thing earlier in the show, and or the Medicare for all.
Medicare for all, yeah.
80%, I think, because so Jimmy Dore is the, you know, we played a clip of him, I think, a couple of weeks ago. You should be watching him on YouTube, Tim. He is a great attacker of the uniparty establishment from the left, and not an unhinged left.
What's his name again?
Jimmy Dore, D-O-R-E.
Okay.
And he was one of these. He was one of the Young Turks, but they kicked him out because they couldn't handle the fact that he was, you know, independent minded.
That he would dissent from their orthodoxy.
There you go.
How do those people?
He was talking about 80%. 80% of Democrats apparently polled support Medicare for all. So his whole thing he goes on is, how can you say, you know, how can you not give this a vote? You know, forget about whether it passes or not, but just to bring it to the floor.
Well, sure. You're right. I mean, that's why presidents get elected. Elections matter. They change policy. So
he actually had this great little package he ran on his most recent show that I saw anyway on YouTube. And let's timestamp us for just in case some more weirdness happens this week. It's 2 o'clock on the 22nd. And he was talking, he played this Noam Chomsky clip, right? And of course, you and I, we hear a Noam Chomsky clip, you're bracing yourself for dictatorship of the proletariat kind of talk, you know? But that's not what it was. What it was Chomsky's confronted with somebody. Apparently Chomsky had said that somebody else should have the right to speak with some horrible, maybe it was anti-Semitic or something, I don't know, anyway. And what happened was this kid, a college kid type, comes up to Chomsky and says, you know, why do you support fascist or whatever? He said, oh no, you can have one of two ways. You can either be for free speech or not for free speech, but you can't be just for free speech for things that you approve of, because then you're not for free speech. The only thing free speech means is to challenge the people in power and for unpopular speech. There's, you don't need protection for popular speech. Anyway, so that's the kind of where he, you know, where he focuses on. So anyway, he's good. And he's attacking Biden and the administration and the Congress from the left on this Medicare for all thing. And he,
another guy like that is Matt Taibbi.
Oh yeah.
Who used to be on Rolling Stone, but he got kicked off again because I think he was too independent.
I
don't know if he got kicked off. Maybe he went independent.
Yeah. Well, you know what happens? They have this new, it's not Patreon, but it's something like that. Substack maybe. Anyway, but Taibbi, he's like a Glenn Greenwald. He's a rock star journalist enough that he could sell, you know, subscriptions and people will buy them.
Well, I mean, and there's a certain weight to what they say because you're coming from an ideological perspective that 99% of the rest of their colleagues are going to protect from criticism, from attack. And he's going to call it as he sees it. And, you know, anybody that calls it as they see it, that's intellectually honest, I'll listen to. The problem is there's so little intellectual honesty left in journalism with people. I mean, where things that have been challenged, for example, they'll say such and such a statement by Trump has been challenged. That's journalism. It's been broadly challenged. That's journalism. But instead, what they say is Trump's lies as if, for example, about the election. But you don't know if it's lies or not. But
without basis, that's what they say.
Right.
But they never once say such and such, like a Democrat says something without basis. It's hilarious. But that's the other thing that just drove me crazy. That's the other thing that just drove me crazy about the inauguration news coverage. All these soft focus pieces about, like, hear how Joe Biden's reimagining the desk, the credenza behind the chair in the Oval Office. And you're like, did Donald Trump get a single or Melania get a single soft focus piece like that outside of Fox News?
Melania didn't get almost anything. I mean,
well, that's the other thing, though. Let's talk about the first lady, because guess what? They said Dr. Jill Biden every time. Nobody said PhD Jill Biden or that it wasn't. I'm telling you, Tim, the number of Americans that right now think a medical doctor is the first lady is skyrocketing.
Well, look, when Whoopi Goldberg says it on the View, that establishes it as facts, Scott. Don't let the facts get in the way of a great narrative.
It really is hilarious. And he, you know,
I got to say this, though, I got to throw a couple of bouquets because I don't suspect I'll have many to throw in the weeks, months, maybe years ahead to them. But I thought Kamala Harris looked smashing in that purple getup.
I thought Michelle was the one in the purple getup.
No, Michelle looked good, too. Michelle actually looked better than I thought she ever looked during the presidency. She wasn't wearing any of those big patterns. And
to me, the ugly in her is not about the dermis, but
Jill Biden.
It's hard for me to appreciate her visage.
Well, I'm just trying to search for something nice to say, Scott. And I'm saying the trio of Democratic women, Michelle and Dr. Jill and Kamala, they all look good.
I actually like Dr. Jill, except for this phony doctor business.
I agree. Like a nice she person, seems, you know, she seems like personable. She seems normal. Seems normal, right. You know, that's
exactly. It's a normal thing, right? Yeah.
Normal is like the biggest compliment you can give somebody.
How hilarious are the Bernie Sanders memes going around?
Boy, did he look miserable at the inaugural?
That homemade knit mitten look is.
I actually
like that because I don't think it was a costume. I think those were the mittens. Those are his mittens. Like that's.
Oh, he absolutely. He doesn't wear costumes.
And I love that. Like all the other working people's representatives are wearing, like, you know, $6,000 custom made overcoat. You know what I mean? He comes in with the homemade, like he's walking
it.
Like,
I love it. You know what? That gives him the authenticity.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll see how he keeps it. If he keeps shilling for an administration that is dumping on all the progressive values that he ran against.
Well, I don't think he's going to be shilling for long because he doesn't have to. I mean, he got his guy elected. Okay, so, you know, it's a different phase now for the left. We saw it in the riots. Antifa and BLM are back on the warpath. You know, the notion that just because once they got Trump out, they'd start to be brought to heel. Not happening. I mean, Joe Biden is just another establishment figure to them, right? So they don't have any interest.
They were chanting F Joe Biden in Seattle, apparently.
Yep.
Last night.
And it was in the same thing in Portland, and you know, but they're back on the warpath. So now it's Joe Biden's problem.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see.
The big advantage he has, of course, is that he's got a media that's not going to report on any of these things.
What are you talking about?
There's no violence. See no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil.
Why would you say that?
Oh, no reason.
I saw the
65 years of media bias I've witnessed in my life, you know.
I saw this report about Jen Psaki's first couple press conferences, and they're like, she called on lots of people, including Fox News. And the premise of that is, of course, that Trump didn't call on CNN reporters, but of course he did over and over again. There was just one, Jim Acosta, that he wanted to boot out of the building because he was behaving physically inappropriate in the building. And the idea that, like, so the rewriting of the history is already, you know, well underway.
Do you think Jim Acosta at home or around work or whatever is strutting around
crying.
Like a...
No, he's crying.
No, I think he's strutting. But first, upon the naming of Joe Biden as president, do you think he was sort of strutting around like a peacock saying, I brought him down. See all that work I did in the White House press room to call him out on his lies.
I think that he's smart enough. I think that he's smart enough to know that he's got to wave goodbye to the goose that laid the golden egg for him.
Yeah, exactly. No, he's now probably getting depressed.
Trump. Really?
Now, of course, if he was smart, what he would do would be kind of irritating to Joe Biden just for the sake of it. So he could say, see, I'm going to hold president to account.
He seemed to not understand the rules. He'll get fired if he treats Joe Biden like or Jen Psaki like he treated any of the Trump.
Well, that's fine. Then he can go work for Fox News.
He'll take Brett or Shepard Smith's job.
Yeah,
right?
Shep. Swap. Him and Shep, you know, like this. Yeah.
So I just want to also say about the Biden presidency that he started it off with the lie that Donald Trump was saying that there were good racists and good non-racists in Charlottesville. And that's not true. As we've played infinity times here on the podcast, Trump was just saying that in terms of the people who think that the statuary in that area should remain or at least not be torn down by an angry mob, there are good people who wanted that outcome in addition to the good people who wanted those statues taken down. And Joe Biden said that's what launched his campaign, that lie.
The reason that he ran. And he wasn't going to run. He said he wasn't going to run after the death of his son, Bo, which caused him not to run in 16. But that when he heard Trump say there were very fine people among, and of course he immediately took that to mean that,
oh, no, he didn't take it to
white supremacist.
I think that's not true, Tim. I'm going to give Joe Biden the credit of being a smart person and knowing that they just sold that lie because it was sellable and they got no pushback from the media.
He's the one that perpetuated it. I don't care who gave it to him. That's up to them if they want to, you know, if they want to say you need to do this.
The point I wanted to come around back to was we talked about the way when he departed Wilmington and waiting for the train, and he goes through the race of everybody involved as if that's important. What is the race of somebody important? It's a fetish.
But it is. To them, to the left of today, the race is the most important thing. It's the first thing you ask before any other question. Male or female? Black? Asian? Hispanic? Transgender? LGBTQ? You want to know? You have to know the identity before you can make any evaluation of the person or what they've said or what they've done. That's what it is on the left today.
And if they're smart, if it's value added, they get the right one. So in other words, that he was waiting, you know, waiting for the black man or whatever, like that bolsters up his, you know. Oh, here's the other thing. I just have to say this, Tim. You know, I understand now that all of the Americans who are Indian and South Asian, who grew up in Canada, can now dream of being president of the United States or vice president of the United States, because that's been done. And I want to celebrate that on the uprising. But what I want to also address is What happens to North Asians who are also Indian and spent their formative years in Canada? When are they going to be able to aspire to the role of presidency, Tim, or vice presidency?
Well, I don't think it'll be long, Scott, because that's a huge demographic in the U.S. Simply by capturing that demographic, former Canadians of color who've moved to the U.S., that's a huge demographic. You would wrap up the election before it even started if you could secure that group of voters.
Can somebody tell me this? If it takes a woman being vice president for girls to dream that they can be vice president, how did Kamala Harris get to be vice president? Right?
What do you think?
Or Kamala Harris?
Well, what do you think Hillary Clinton's thinking right about now?
I don't know.
I mean, what do you think she's thinking? So if I'm Biden, I'm thinking, you know what? I'm thinking about this Biden and Hillary Clinton thing. Suppose Beau Biden did not die and Joe Biden had run in 2016. The question is, would he have beaten Trump because people didn't hate the guy the way they hated Hillary? And Hillary's saying, wait a minute, now they're going to put this guy in who is, you know, who's decrepit, who's in decline.
Yeah.
When they could have had me. As the most powerful person in the world, I can't imagine the lamentation of Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Well, do you think Biden,
about all the many ways privately and savor them each and every one.
So here's a question to you.
Right.
Do you think Biden would have beaten Trump in 2016?
Oh, God, no. No, the only reason why Donald Trump loses is because of the 4 year, well, call it 4.5 year campaign against him waged by the national media, whereby every story came to be there's some bad thing in the world and it's Trump's fault. And they still were only able to get, I mean, what was the final vote total? Do you have a sense? What was the separation? How many more votes did
about 7 million?
Okay.
Reported as 7 million.
So only 7 million more Americans voted for Joe Biden than voted for Donald Trump. That's still a huge amount of people that voted for Donald Trump after those 4 years. I mean, if you're an anti-Trumper, and I'm speaking directly to a specific member of the audience that I know to be an anti-Trumper, Tim, if you think that if you read all the stories about Donald Trump, you know, throughout the years and think, how could anybody vote for this guy? Well, just think about what it would take for them to vote for the guy, knowing all those stories that you see. That's what they think of the competition. Mm-hmm. So, you know, take a look at who's on your side of the aisle and see what they're bringing to bear. One of the better memes I enjoyed from this, you know, the inauguration election was great for the memes. So thanks for that, meme creators. Was this, there's this panel and it's an ICE agent and, he's like talking to this little kid in a cage and he's like, hey, I got good news for you, kid. And the kid says, what, you found my mommy? Question mark. He says, no, Trump's out. No more mean tweets. Right. Yeah, that's the entire deal. Right.
Right. Like, right.
That's what we got. We got all you people out there who just couldn't handle the mean tweets. Well, guess what? They're going to be beautiful tweets now when he declares war. And when tensions are higher with Russia and China, you know, it's going to be all about, well, at least he's not tweeting mean things,
you know.
And when the dollar's worthless.
It's like we're talking to people who were generally what you call free market people, conservatives, Republicans, etc. I mean, if you want to use a bit of hyperbole, what you would say is that these people mostly said, I'll give Trump an A for policy and an F for personality. A for policy, F for personality. Clearly, Trump didn't lose because of policy. You could say he didn't handle the coronavirus well. That's subject to debate.
Yeah, I don't.
But
I don't
he wouldn't
think what
lose it on
is
that
all
alone.
Controversial. It gets a give. Yeah, 100%
but
right.
So here's
I might say B or B plus rather than A. But I get your point.
Okay, so you know, and you maybe not an F, but a D. You know, for personality. But the point is that the policy and the personality were so separate. But now you've got the personality gone. Yeah, they can continue to demonize him for a couple of months and try to do some big show about removing Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz so that no senator would dare to challenge Electoral College results again. I mean, they can do all of that. But what they're going to be left with is the Trump policy. Now, good luck with them trying to reverse and re-regulate the economy, to reverse the tax cuts, which means a tax increase, okay, to go back into the Paris Climate Accord, which is, of course, going to re-regulate the industry yet again. And he's going to go
and
probably
a 1-2 punch with the Keystone Pipeline, by the way, both
the
those
Keystone
things.
Pipeline already
like
40,000
jobs.
Well,
guess what? That's gone.
And then you want a public option to turn Obamacare into Biden care. And that's going to mean another tax increase. And then if you're going to continue on the path you've always been, if you're Joe Biden on foreign involvements, then you're going to re-involve us in a war after a president who was the first president in a long time not to get us involved in a new foreign conflict.
And by the way, just stop right there and just say this. To me, that is Donald Trump's abiding legacy and why.
I agree.
I've seen these. I was in a Facebook thing with a prominent libertarian policy person who they posted one of these things about Donald Trump being the worst president in the world. Or ever. And I wrote back and I said, you know, take all the presidents that started a war and put them in one bucket. He's better than every single one of those presidents because nothing is worse for the people fighting it and the people on both sides than war. I mean, it's just beyond horrible. And the idea that Donald Trump didn't start a new one is great.
You know, it was just another one of these promises that he delivered on. And if you go back and look at the things that he promised and what he delivered, it's remarkable, Scott. The record is, I mean, it's a record that honestly, if we don't get the coronavirus, 400,000 people now dead, what, millions, tens of millions, was it 10 million? And I don't know how many people have been infected at this point. But if we don't get that, which then leads to this massive unsolicited mail-in ballot, you know, basically a plane drop of unsolicited mail-in ballots, those things don't happen. I mean, Trump would have won easily. I mean, and it's not.
Well, also, if he was 10% less of an unhinged jerk, he would have won too, I think.
Right. The problem with Trump was always, and if I heard one person, I heard it ad nauseum for 4 years, people who generally liked his policies and said, I just wish he would stop tweeting. I don't like his tweets. And I would say to them, you know, did it ever occur to you? Have you looked? You don't get one without the other.
Yeah.
Donald Trump, you don't get the policy. You don't get the record without the personality. You can't separate them. And maybe the personality had a lot to do with why he was able to put so much landmark change on the record.
Maybe. I feel sorriest for the pizza parlor that's down the street from his golf course that's going to lose so much business because every time he would go over there, the reporters would flock in and, you know, buy their lunches. So that's a lot of business lost.
Scott, I so admire your concern for the common man. That is the thing that has always marked my entire sort of personification of you.
You know, we appreciate what we don't have sometimes. We look out and we see, and then we appreciate that, you know, we could dream that we would have that.
And so consequently, of course, you love to take public transportation because it brings you closer to the proletariat, which
you know,
so adore.
I swear to God, Tim, it just drives me bonkers, this lockdown of the Capitol. So there are, I think, 12 or 15 metro stations. Metro is the name of the subway system in Washington, D.C. and surrounding area, and just shut down for days in advance of the inaugural until a day after. And there's no, this is, by the way, and this is, of course, after telling the people of the area, like, don't buy a car, use this public transportation. That's how you're a solid citizen, right? Is to not pollute, not whatever. And meanwhile, you've got like a week of your life that they just confiscated from you. What are you supposed to do? How are you supposed to get to work? How are you supposed to?
Hey, that's your problem. That's your problem. That's the little people. They can't be concerned with that. The way you are, Scott. Yeah. They're not concerned with the little people the way you are.
It's just just bonkers. Oh, by the way, we got to just talk just because the Pete Buttigieg appointment. I mean, you know, that just tells you that the Secretary of Transportation is a nothing job, because if you could take a guy who never once said a damn thing about transportation, didn't give a crap about it, didn't focus on it, didn't have nothing to do with them, but he was promised a high level appointment for withdrawing from the race at a key moment that benefited who? President now, Joseph R. Biden.
I'm not going to listen to this, Scott. Until you get on to a public bus in South Bend, Indiana, and see how efficiently he ran that town's transportation infrastructure. I'm not going to listen to criticism.
Like the Mussolini of
him.
Indiana, or wherever the hell he's from.
South Bend.
Yeah.
It's South Bend, not Fort Wayne, right? I get those two. It is South Bend. It better be. Oh,
I just think it's so hilarious. What is he going to do? I guess, you know what? Buy Tesla, probably. I'm sure he's going to be, you know, because he wants to be friends with Elon Musk.
Everybody.
The hospitality report, Tim. You know, I talked in a previous uprising about the horrible treatment I received at the JW Marriott. We're still investigating the origins of that, you know, the directives, where they may have came from. But the Kimpton came through from Hunter at the front desk to Memo at the bar, Tim.
Hunter Biden was at the front desk?
That's
a story, and you didn't even put that up on LibertyNation.com? Yeah,
this is a different one. And let's go ahead and thank today's sponsor, LibertyNation.com. LibertyNation.com is a conservatarian news and analysis website featuring podcasts, video casts, and written pieces. And LibertyNation.com is a proud content partner with WhatFinger.com. WhatFinger.com is a news aggregator, and you need it because there's too much news out there to pay attention to it all. So the lovely aggregators at WhatFinger.com present a panoply of stories around the web that are worth clicking on, including a fair bit of content from LibertyNation.com. So
good
go ahead and
panoply.
Check it out. All right. Do you have any predictions for the Biden presidency? Do you think so? Oh, also impeachment. We can talk about that for just a second, which is Joe Biden has had articles of impeachment filed against him. And of course, we've got the Trump impeachment ongoing. This is one of those things to me, Tim, that's just so delicious. I love the idea that, because I think they can squeeze donor money out of it. That's my whole supposition is that the reason why they're going through with Donald Trump's impeachment, when we know for sure, there's no debate, he did not violate any criminal law to incite. That's just not possible. In fact, it becomes less possible every day because we learn that the people who did the worst of it planned to do it before the 6th. And that's on record. So he didn't cause a riot or incite a riot.
You knew that was going to be true, didn't you? You know they would find out that this was a pre-planned attack and it had, I mean.
I heard the word, you're the first person who I heard call it an insurrection.
It was an insurrection. I know it was.
I actually said to myself when you said it, I said, that was no insurrection. And you know what I did? I went to the dictionary and I read the definition for insurrection. I said, no, actually, that wasn't an insurrection, an act of insurrection.
But I did the same thing, right.
When they said about incitement, I went to the legal dictionary. Okay. And I looked up incitement. Then I went to the statutes and I looked up incitement, and it was abundantly clear that Donald Trump is in no way, shape, guilty of incitement. So that in and of itself is just a lie. So why do it then? Well, I think why do it, Tim, is because you can fundraise and make a bundle of dough off the people who are going to be never Trumpers till they die. You know, he could move to Saudi Arabia and renounce his citizenship and they'd still want him impeached. But I think it's hilarious that they're going to tie up the Senate with all this impeachment business. Honestly, I think it's hilarious. Like, and I think a lot of the Americans who are glad that Donald Trump is no longer their president, and I understand why, you know, even if policy aside, I understand why they want that, the reality. But what I don't think they're going to be able to be convinced of is that it's good to tie up the Senate with this guy's business, you know, ongoing.
Scott, they have not yet been able to develop a vaccine for Trump derangement syndrome.
TDS, yeah.
No TDS vaccine hasn't been developed. So the plague continues.
Well, I guess we'll have to stay tuned to Ms. Rachel Maddow to see where they are at stages in their
boy, their numbers are going to go way
in their down. Pandemic. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for us. We're going to put a pin in it. Thank you for joining us this week on The Uprising. Timothy Donner, host of Liberty Nation Radio.
Always a pleasure.
That's it for this edition of The Uprising. Remember to hit Liberty Nation News for original articles, the Rabbit Hole podcast, and our signature television program, The Conservative Five. Just go to libertynation.com on your browser or hit Rumble, YouTube, or check out our Liberty Nation News Roku channel. I'm Scott Cosenza. Thanks for watching. This program is a production of libertynation.com, conservative news where truth matters.